Welcome to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. My guest today is an example of triumphing over trauma. In the late 1960s, Betty Kwan was living a privileged life with her family in southern China. She was the daughter of a dentist and a doctor, educated in the U.S., who were prominent in the village of Kaiping for using their wealth to help feed the needy. They were also somewhat notorious for having Betty baptized as a Christian and for her mother's practice of sheltering lepers and abandoned female children. These and other practices would eventually target them as so-called enemies of the state during Chairman Mao's Cultural Revolution, which lasted from 1966 to 1976. One night when Betty was about seven, soldiers burst into her home and destroyed it. They separated her family members and imprisoned Betty in the village garbage dump. She remained captive there for 3 years, wearing the same thin pajamas she'd been abducted in, until she risked a dangerous escape to Hong Kong with three of her siblings. The torture she'd experienced left her mute, prematurely gray, and full of shame. She ultimately migrated to America and put down roots in Eureka, California, where she became a tireless and eventually celebrated advocate for the hungry and the homeless. In 2003, Humboldt State University Press released a book about her by Karen Price. It's called The Gray Bird Sings, The Extraordinary Life of Betty Kwan Chin. Betty and I spoke over Zoom recently about the path to healing, first for herself, then for the homeless community. Betty, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
So you went on in your later years to thrive and even make enormous positive changes in your local culture in California. But first you had to survive these awful circumstances. So how did you find the strength or the hope to do that?
I tell you what happened. When I come to the United States, my hair's gray, long hair. But when I get out of the airport, the people look at me, they smile. First time I ever see people smile at me. They do not just laugh at me. They just smile at me. And then I also remember, I can feel when they smile at me, I can look at them. I don't have to look down on the ground anymore. I really tell myself, I say, you know what? How I could tell these people the kindness to me? But I don't know how to talk and I don't know how to write. I want to do something to pay to these people. Sometimes my kid asks me, Mom, why are you so driven? But I don't feel the driven. I feel the return to the people, the kindness to me.
Once you made it to physical safety in the U.S. and you began experiencing this kindness that must have felt so soothing to you, you still, of course, had some psychological scars. What did it feel like trying to move on when you were dealing with PTSD, you had a language barrier?
You know, Chinese had a culture. We don't talk. Even today, when I talk to book, talk to the people ask me, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? You are insulting your family, or we don't talk.
Given that culture where you were not encouraged to share your feelings, and you also had this shame, you know, considering your treatment.
Yeah.
Here's this interesting thing. Karen Price, the author of the book, explains that there's this specifically Chinese genre called literature of the wounded that finally started coming out in the 1970s after Chairman Mao died, where people finally started breaking that taboo and talked about their experiences, talked about the suffering that went on in the Cultural Revolution. You didn't learn about that until recent years.
They don't talk about it in China. They're still scared. They don't talk. Yeah, we don't talk about it. And then when I younger, I didn't talk about, if I talk about who will marry me.
Right. I was curious about how you felt to learn that these other stories were coming out. Because at first you were so young when this happened to you, you were confused about why it was happening, why you and your family deserved it. You didn't know the extent of the suffering. When you found out how widespread it was, did it feel validating toward you? Did it feel encouraging? How did you feel when you learned that there were so many other people sharing stories like this?
When I left China, and then when I hear more, it really encouraged me to, I'm not ashamed, but I just suffer from a whole cultural revolution of people trying to escape from China to Hong Kong. That was on the newspaper.
Right.
And then I just tell the people, they never gave up. Sometimes the hard life is really encourage you, make you a better person. What's happened to me when I've seen, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. I find the passion always built on the hard time, on the trouble time. It's tough. It's hard. I deal with so many mental health issues with that client. I do not suffer mental health like most of the people on the street. If somebody suffer what I suffer, must be 100% on the street or in the mental health hospital. But I did. I'm grateful for my life.
If you're just joining us, this is My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney, and I'm talking with the founder of the Betty Kwan Chin Homeless Foundation, which serves the unhoused population of California's Humboldt County.
That brings us to a pivot point that you had in Eureka. So you were living on the west coast of California, and your family set you up with a kindly scholar named Lung Chin.
Yeah.
You married and moved to Eureka. He was teaching at Humboldt State University.
Uh-huh.
And once you had children and your children entered school, you began helping at school, working.
Yeah.
And one day, I think you were in the schoolyard, and a little girl came up and told you that she was hungry. Describe that scene.
So when my kid and my older kid in kindergarten, and then I worry about people hurting my kid. They are the only Chinese in the whole school. So I go to the schoolyard and watch my kid. Nobody hurt him. Nobody mistreat him. So always on the bench, the little girl sit next to them. They also look at his lunch pail, and my son also get him something to eat. So when they lost, asked me, "Mom, can you make more lunch?" And then so-and-so is very hungry. So I said, "Sure, I make you more lunch." So I said, "Do you ask them why she hungry?" And my son, they asked her, and she said, "They live in a car." Mm-hmm. And that's how I started to feed the one family, another family, and more over the years. Now this is in my 42 years.
Outstanding. And so it grew from feeding that one child and her family. You realized that they were unhoused. And it sort of tied in to a wish that you had back when you were in captivity in China, because you experienced such hunger. In fact, millions of your fellow country people experienced starvation at the hands of Chairman Mao's policies. So in the midst of all this and your own suffering, you had this idea, someday I want to feed somebody on Fine China. But you didn't just cross that off your bucket list. It became a complete ministry. And you began looking at the root causes of the children involved in the unhoused population. You began preparing backpacks for them so they could go to school. You began bringing them lunch and dinners where they were in their outdoor communities. This didn't always sit well with the people in your community. Some business owners thought you were encouraging a bad element.
Well, before 2008, I'm not allowed to go to the second, third, and fourth street because I feed the homeless people. The cop pointed a gun at me, and then I had 5 lawsuits against me. So when Maria came around and asked, she came to Eureka to help me. And she said, "Let's walk through the old town, see who can stop you."
The Maria that Betty's referring to is journalist Maria Shriver. When Maria was the First Lady of California, she created the Minerva Award to honor women who've changed their country. In 2008, she presented it to Betty. I asked Maria what made Betty stand out to her.
So I think what stood out and still stands out to me about Betty is her enthusiasm, her drive, her passion to make a difference in people's lives. She exudes a joy. And very often when you're meeting people that are in the kind of hard work of changing people's lives on the front lines of humanity, they're pretty serious. And oftentimes the joy has slipped away because it's such hard work. And Betty was always so full of joy and so happy with the small incremental successes that she had that have turned out to be really big life-changing successes. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of grit, determination, sweat to do what Betty is doing. So I wanted to be a part of encouraging her, bringing attention to her work, validating her work, and lifting her up. I think that's why you're in a role like the First Lady.
That act of lifting others up that Maria Shriver talks about is part of a chain reaction that started with the kindness that Betty was shown as a refugee. She then paid it forward by feeding so many homeless people. She drew the attention of people with powerful platforms like the First Lady of California and President Barack Obama. That validation then attracted greater resources and helping hands to Betty's efforts so that she could lift up even more people and train them to help others. I wanted to know more about how Betty had been able to overcome her own adversity enough to guide others through theirs.
What advice would you have to somebody who wants to push through their trauma and move on with their lives?
Don't be afraid. You make your choice. Either you feel sorry all your life or do something good for yourself. You know, when you do that, your whole tomato in your body, they can eat you alive. You know, you got to go forward. You know, one step at a time. Once in a while, pop out one puzzle. It's so emotional, get involved and so upsetting. But you had to go forward. Each time when you fell down, stand up, you much stronger. Your stand on the ground much stronger. Nobody gonna push you.
So keep going forward.
It's very painful.
Yes. So you have the Betty Kwan Chin Homeless Foundation. How many people are you feeding on a monthly basis?
Okay, we had a woman's shelter. Mm-hmm. And we had a family woman's shelters for abused women or human trafficking. They can stay there with the children. And the family shelter allowed the father and mother with the kid can stay there. We had a respite for the people suffer from an illness or cancer. And I don't want them die in their bushes. I want to come here. I will work with them toward the end of life. I respect human life. And then we had a shelter built by a shipping container. So we can house 40 people in there. I encourage all the homeless people, you have your gift. You can support yourself. Find yourself, dignity, your ability. You can support yourself. We invite local business. If you had a job open for my client, and then they can do that kind of work or do the home care or clean up the yard work or mechanic or build construction company. So anybody got a work. I said, why are you not working? You find yourself. You had ability.
I'm curious how you knew how to do all this. You've essentially in Eureka, in Humboldt County, become a leader in community building when you had no
education.
And yet you've managed to really transform your community and be a model for how to deal with unhoused populations. At first, you were met with criticism saying that when you were helping them, you were just enabling them to keep the cycle going and they were taking handouts. But you're known for sort of a tough love approach where you said, I will help you, but there are rules to being here and you have to contribute. It seemed to have earned such loyalty by you holding them accountable.
They
then did turn around and give a hand up to, you know, once they were stabilized, they were able to help currently unhoused people. So you've created a whole system that seems like it will keep going, you know, long after you and your husband, who helps a lot in this organization, have retired from this work. So you've made a lasting legacy here.
Yeah. Also, I feed about 300 people a day, every single day. Dinner time is not the food, more like a personal connection. I'm more like a mom.
Yeah, that's a big part of their healing that you're giving them is just that connection.
Myself is healing too.
Thank you for sharing your story of healing and helping and the changes that you've made in the world. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
That was 69-year-old Betty Chin. You can learn more about her organization at bettychin.org. That's Chin with two N's. I'm Vanessa Finney, host of My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. You can subscribe to this series wherever you get your podcasts.